Welcome to this edition of This Is Design Intelligence, conversations with leadership voices in the built environment. This edition is sponsored by the Tricord Group, leading successful relationship constructs for over 25 years, and VIM, helping the architecture and design disciplines design, deliver, and operate better buildings for a better world.
Greetings, I'm Dave Gilmore, and this is Design Intelligence. Joining me in the studio today is Dr. Barbara White Bryson, an Associate Dean of Research and Director of the Drockman Institute at the College of Architecture, Planning, and Landscape Architecture, a part of the University of Arizona. We're excited that Barbara is with us. Her newest book, Creating a Culture of Predictable Outcomes, is now out and about. We're going to spend some time with Dr. Bryson talking about some of the details in this book. Some of them are fun, some of them are quite serious. Barbara, thank you for joining me again in the studio. We're so happy that you're here and looking forward to our discussion today.
Oh, Dave, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for having me. And I'm really excited to be finally talking about the real book in print, in people's hands.
So why this book? Why this book at this time? It's extraordinary what we've been through. No one would have planned when you were writing this book that we would have gone through what we've just gone through in 2020. And so maybe this is a bit prophetic in nature because the themes you're going to be dealing with in this book are front and center, having gone through this very difficult 2020. So why this book at this time?
So Dave, you're right. Conditions were very different 2 years ago when I sat down to write this book. However, 2 years ago, I was concerned about the industry, and I was sharing the continued frustration of project leaders that were making, I think, three big mistakes. First, most key players in the industry tended to focus on process rather than culture. Second, across the industry, we seem to be completely satisfied with modest, incremental improvement in delivery, quality, or cost. And number three, our players in the industry tend to go to war with their own teammates on projects, even though by doing so, they rob projects of project value from the owners and even from themselves. By making these mistakes, our industries remain in the dark ages, basically, and leave our industries open for disruption. I believe that we can correct course by focusing on building a great culture that's based on sophisticated, caring leadership, high-performing collaborative teams, and master-level decision-making discipline informed by values. This new focus will finally address massive inefficiencies, waste, and unpredictability in the design and construction industries. Well, that was 2 years ago, which I think still holds today. But I also believed 2 years ago that we needed to innovate, that we needed to create cultures where innovation was possible. Little did I know that 2 years ago that we'd be faced with 2020 in COVID, George Floyd, closures, demonstrations, recessions, and worse. But now we have an opportunity. What did Winston Churchill say, that we should never let a good crisis go to waste? This is a moment where not only is innovation desperately needed, but if we do not innovate, we are wide open for yet another round of pushing providers out of the industry through this recession and prices going up and owners looking for alternatives to what we can offer them as far as pricing and product. So this is an important moment. COVID and the other disruptions of this year have set the stage. And so this book offers us an opportunity to rethink, reimagine, regroup, and reinvent, which we need so desperately at this moment.
It is spot on with what you've just said. I think that we find so many that are recognizing that change is needed, but it seems overwhelming in an industry that is so deeply entrenched in traditional paradigms. And you're right. The idea of incremental change may get us there at the end of this century. if we can't make leaps in change, we will find ourselves steadily irrelevant. And I'm deeply concerned about that. And so your book comes at just an unbelievable time in the history of this industry. Last time we talked, which was sometime a few months ago, as we were teeing up the idea of the book, you articulated a number of reasons why the built environment has such great impact. You also discuss these impacts in the book as you form the need for innovation and research. So what has COVID taught us? Is there anything more that we have learned through this COVID period about the impact of the built environment?
Dave, that's so important. And COVID has taught us a great deal. There really, in my opinion, is almost nothing that impacts our health, our resources, our climate, our economy, our culture, as much as the built environment. And we have to take this responsibility seriously as professionals. For example, buildings account for nearly 40% of the energy-related CO2 emissions globally. Commercial and residential buildings in the United States consume 40% of the total energy, including 70% of our electricity and 40% of our raw materials. 136 million tons of building-related construction, demolition, and demolition debris are generated in the United States every single year. And this waste, construction waste of all countries, ends up in landfills across the world. And then we're hit with COVID. And suddenly, the built environment has so much impact on the way that we protect and prevent the transmission of the disease and our ability to adapt buildings to allow us to function in the face of this disease. COVID impacts the way that we treat our surfaces within buildings, the way we have to think about air quality. We know that there are opportunities for sensors to address infrastructure, to address isolation. There are questions that we cannot answer related to all of these areas. And yet there's huge opportunities as well related to testing. For instance, here at the University of Arizona, Dr. Ian Pepper tests effluents. He's the person who coined the phrase, poop doesn't lie. And he is able to identify if COVID exists within a building. But he can't break that down to a floor or a section of a building because the infrastructure is not designed so that he can test in smaller increments of a building. We can think about how, and we should be researching how, buildings can be more adaptive in crisis situations, whether it's pandemic or in other areas. We also don't have enough information or enough research to help us understand how the world is changing related to real estate and building usage related to pandemics or the other crises that we've been facing this year. We work in silos in built environment research. And what that means is that we have insufficient transdisciplinary research. We have insufficient research that is what I call soup to nuts research, research that helps us understand not only the technical solution, but also the behavioral impacts, the policy impacts, the implementation challenges, and the systems ramifications. We have to do more research that allows us to understand all of these challenges so that we can make solutions work. And in fact, we just don't have the infrastructure in research to allow that to happen.
Wow. So I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready for another gaping hole in the continuum here. That is difficult. Talk to me about what does that mean when you say that the core infrastructure for this type or body of research doesn't even exist, much less the discipline of that research. Help me with that.
Well, we've been doing research, and this is a function of creating a culture of predictable outcomes. We do so many things in silos. So true transdisciplinary research in the built environment doesn't exist in very many places. So when I talk about it, soup to nuts research that addresses behavior, policy, systems applications, as well as the technical applications, so that we understand how we're going to implement research, as well as how we're going to actually solve the one technical problem that may be involved. But to get back to the overarching issues of the book, I talk about in the book in some of the opening chapters that when we address the industries of design and construction, it occurred to me as I was sitting down to write this book and having done so much research in leadership and collaboration and decision making that, in fact, it was happened when I was reading Stanley McChrystal's Team of Teams, that we often, as professionals in the industry, actually go out to do projects as if we're fighting a war. We believe that we need to do what's best for our own team, our own company, even if it hurts the overall project, even if it hurts the client, even if it hurts other members of the project team. And we feel that that's the right thing to do. But in fact, by doing that, we steal value from the overall project, and we actually undermine ourselves by going to war. And that's what's happening on the research area, that's what's happening in the innovation area, and it's certainly happening during the design and construction processes.
You served in a role for over a decade as you wore the hat of an owner, if I could call it that, at Rice University for all of its building programs for quite a while. How do we translate and create research that is attractive, appealing, and informative for the ownership community? I think so often a lot of our research is related to our own set of professions or disciplines, when overall we find that the owner community is, who has their hands on the rudder, ultimately, is still operating on an old paradigm of satisfied dissatisfaction, almost, putting up with all this inefficiency, this waste, this tardiness that we're marked by. How do we create research that speaks deeply into the owner mindset?
Well, as you said, that's one thing. But let me just expand just a minute on my own background, just to let everyone know my own experience. I actually worked as part of the owner environment between 5 years at the University of Miami and 14 years as director of capital projects and then as associate vice president of facilities engineering and planning at Rice University for nearly two decades as on the owner's side, which was really illuminating. I worked with the board of trustees at both universities. I came to understand how important it is to understand the language of owners, the language of board members, the business plans of what we do as owners, to understand how projects need to be aligned with the business of whether it's education or hospitals or whatever. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote The Owner's Dilemma, is to help industry professionals understand where the owner is coming from and also help owners understand what kind of impact that they can have. But to get down to the brass tacks of your question, Dave, you answered part of it. And one is that one part of the answer is, yes, we can provide research. We can provide much more information to help owners understand the decisions that they're going to be making, because right now they don't have that information. It's really tough when you are dealing with processes which are incredibly opaque, there are not resources to inform the decisions. And in fact, many decisions are being made through anecdotal information that's been provided by colleagues or peers, president to president, board member to board member. And often there's very little research information that can help in defense. I honestly believe, however, Dave, and I've heard you and other business-oriented professionals in our space talk to this about how we have gone through a number of cycles that have continuously increased the cost of construction and the cost of design and have continuously devalued what design and in some cases construction is providing the owner. And that more and more owners of small and mid-sized companies are being crowded out of the ability to be able to purchase new construction or major projects. And the more that that happens, the more owners are going to realize that they have to do something very different, and they're going to be searching out alternative delivery methods, delivery sources for answers, because they need better answers for their business plans.
You know, the new book, you mentioned the first book several times, The Owner's Dilemma, an extraordinary book in and of itself. Do you see that this new book is The Owner's Dilemma 2.0, or is this something very different?
Well, and I do mention The Owner's Dilemma a number of times, and it's not a 2.0. This is a book that is for the entire design and construction industries. It is a book that is intended to address the needs of all team members, and even those team members that don't believe that they have power in the dynamic. I'm hoping that it's also going to put a little fear into some of those team members from the point of view that they're going to recognize that something has to change and that as long as they're looking towards doing things the same old way or only incrementally changing, that they're not going to find the answers that they're seeking. And so this is not an easy book. This is a book that does build on The Owner's Dilemma from the point of view that there's leadership lessons, there's collaboration lessons, but it really digs deep into what is a good leader in this context? What is a great collaborator in this context? What is real decision-making in this context? And yes, it addresses values, because if we're not going to have team values, project values, it's going to be very difficult to stay going in the same direction.
In the book, I've got four favorite chapters. So it's like I have four best friends. I don't know. Four favorite chapters. And one of them is the 20 freight trains of disruption. An extraordinary list here. There's an interesting statement you make here. Though many complain that the path ahead is obscured by a foggy future, it is not hard to see what is coming at us if you know where to look. Why did you include this in this book? It is future-oriented. Is it we're going to get hit by a freight train? We're going to ride the freight train? Help me understand why you included this chapter in this book.
Yes, there's a wonderful book that I read a year or so ago called The Future is Faster Than You Think by Peter Diamandis. And it talks about the fact that the future is at hand. How many times, Dave, have you heard people say, well, yeah, all that stuff, that's just fuzzy and it's out there, but it's really not really going to happen. We heard it about CAD. We heard it about building information modeling. The fact is that we're already in a world where machine learning is actively changing our lives. Mm-hmm. We're already in a world where crowdsourcing is changing the way we're thinking. And crowdsourcing solved a PPE problem during COVID-19, and it's solving problems in the built environment. Integrated supply chain is already a way that new entrants to the design and construction market are able to get a foothold like Katerra, get a foothold and get investment and get action because they're solving those problems. These are not disruptive ideas that are way out in the future. This is happening faster than you think. And so I'm putting these out there because, as I said a moment ago, I kind of want people to be a little scared. I want people to recognize that they've got to change profoundly in order to be ready to make these changes. And in fact, we need these changes. We need people to look at what they're doing and what they care about and what freight trains that they may be aligned with and use those freight trains to make them better and to be ready to innovate with those.
So I'm looking, you know, at some of these 20 freight trains of disruption, hyper prefabrication. Wow, is that coming quickly? The mini robotic construction, swarm intelligence. There's a book in that into itself, isn't there? The whole idea of dynamic decision modeling. And then, of course, the trillion sensor future. And one of the things that is so intriguing to me is the rise of property technology and design technologies that are just jumping in leaps and how they're changing. Like you said, things are already changing, whether we're asleep and not seeing it or not. They are redefining our reality even while we're here. I love what Randy Deutsch says at the back of your book. He says that this list on the 20 disruptions will impact your future and is alone worth the price of the book. Thank you, Randy, for that. That was great.
That made me very happy.
So a couple of months ago, we had in the studio with us Phil Bernstein, Scott Simpson, and we got into a pretty serious topic around risk. In your book, Chapter 6 is Embracing Risk and Contracts. And your approach to risk and contracts is very straightforward. It's honestly a bit shocking. I kind of like the shock and awe that you put in because you, Barbara, literally lay down the gauntlet here. And I can imagine that some who practice law might be taking exception to some of your advice. So why did you go there in this book?
Well, I do want to make sure that all of the listeners and all the readers know that I am not a lawyer. I am an experienced owner, but I went there because, first, I do believe that as industry professionals, that we are among the most uninformed of professionals around the world, and that goes to the second reason, is that we are the most handcuffed in the world by our legal-related tools. And so I spend a good bit of time in this chapter speaking truth to the industry, saying, hey, we need to become informed and we need to take control. And these tools need to work for us in a way that allows us to return to being the professionals we want to be and to allow us to innovate and to allow us to get to the next level of delivery. And if we don't do that, it'll keep us mired in this place where we keep on wondering, what's going on? What are we doing wrong? We got to get rid of the handcuffs.
I think what I came away with here was that you directly are challenging the status quo. You are forcing us to ask questions. Not just to ask questions, but to seek truth about what reality are we really living in here and what reality do we desire. We don't desire to go to war. We don't desire the anxiety and stress that most projects are resident with. We desire collaborative teaming. We desire relationship with all the stakeholders, not just transaction. That's what we really desire, and we have the opportunity to literally create that through the work that you've done here, through these themes of leadership and collaboration and decision-making that are all based in a set of values. This is an extraordinary book for us to take up and to take time in. So last question, you know, in your role at the University of Arizona as the Associate Dean of Research, Director of the Drockman Institute at CAPLA, you're spending a lot of time in this question of research for the future. What should we be expecting to come out of your programming and the programming of the school when it's maybe starting to address this question of missing infrastructure toward research and then collaborative research maybe across the academy around this? What could we be looking forward to coming out of CAPLA in the future?
Well, thank you. And I am happily working on the university level strategic plan research. It's called Restruct. Restruct is the university initiative to build built environment research that is truly pan-university, transdisciplinary, to try to take on this approach to research in the built environment that solves the complete problem, that allows us to not only solve the technical issue, but truly make sure that problems are solved in a way that they can be implemented, that we can solve the policy problem, solve the behavior problem, solve the full systemic problem, solve the implementation problem throughout the process, that we have the legal researchers, the social science researchers, the medical researchers, the optical science, the humanities researchers with us, so that we are not solving problems in silos. We now have partners in four other universities. We have 30 external partners in the industries. We are working together to try to build projects that are data informed, that are addressing design for optimal health, redesigning systems for better efficiency within urban and rural environments, to rethink inequities in the built environment, and also to address decision making in the built environment through evidence and through data. I believe that this is a truly unique set of initiatives that will help us help all of academia and in industry to think differently about how we address built environment research and how we support the design and construction industries, as well as decision makers within government and other areas, to make decisions about what's happening in our built environment. Because as we've said before, almost nothing impacts our health, our economy, our research, resources, our climate, our life, quite as much as our built environment.
Creating a culture of predictable outcomes, how leadership, collaboration, and decision-making drive architecture and construction. That's the book, the author, Dr. Barbara White Bryson. Barbara, thank you for joining us again. I'm so happy that we got you back in the studio.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure talking to you, as always. And I want to thank Design Intelligence Media for giving me the opportunity to talk about creating a culture of predictable outcomes. Thank you.
Until next time, I'm Dave Gilmore, and this is Design Intelligence.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of This is Design Intelligence, sponsored by the Tricord Group and VIM. The producer for This Is Design Intelligence is Laura Spells. Sound engineering by Jared Knabel. This has been a DI Media Group production.